If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf, joined as always by Chris Cottmore. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing well, thanks.
And Riley Fessler. How are you, Riley?
Pretty good.
Excellent way to start the week. We, of course, are going to look at a few of the stories that are leading the way in the news this week and talk a little bit about what their meaning is. Let's start with Riley.
Israeli officials are increasingly worried about potential arrest warrants from the International Criminal Court as international scrutiny intensifies over the conflict in Gaza, including the recent airstrikes in Rafah that resulted in 22 casualties, including women and children. The ICC's ongoing probe investigates alleged war crimes by Israel and Palestine militants since the 2014 conflict, as well as settlement activities in occupied territories by the Israelis. Despite denials of ICC jurisdiction by Israel and the U.S., possible warrants could pose significant diplomatic and legal challenges for Israeli leaders as they travel abroad. The ICC and the ICJ are both scrutinizing Israel's actions with significant global attention and implications for both.
Yeah, a lot of the focus seems to be on whether Israel is deliberately starving people in Gaza, whether they have blocked humanitarian aid flows. That, of course, does not have anything to do with what Netanyahu says is being interfered with here, which is Israel's right to defend itself. We'll see how this turns out. We'll see if it's a real thing. If it is, it could be quite consequential. Personally, I'm of the view that the ICC is a useful organization and that the United States and all countries should support its activities. We don't because we fear that we will be accused of crimes. That, of course, is the problem. We shouldn't do things that might lead us to be accused of crimes. Could be another blow to the Netanyahu administration and therefore could be quite significant in terms of the current conflict right now. Chris?
Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has decided to continue as Spain's leader despite a turbulent week filled with uncertainty about his political future. The decision follows a temporary pause from official duties last week, which he took after a court launched a preliminary investigation into corruption claims against his wife, Begoña Gómez. These allegations, which he described as a harassment campaign by right-wing media, were initiated by the far-right affiliated organization Manos Limpias. However, the Madrid public prosecutor recently recommended dismissing the probe due to insufficient evidence, further supported by Manos Limpias's admission that their claims might be based on unreliable online news sources. Shocker. Sanchez, who has been in power since 2018, made this contemplative pause despite the surprise it caused within his own socialist party.
Interesting story. We, of course, don't care about the bad behavior of wives here. I mean, you know, Ginny Thomas helped foment uprising here in the United States. And last week, her husband, Clarence Thomas, was on the Supreme Court ruling on it. I mean, you know, like, you know, this is apparently not something that people care about anymore, you know, what a wife might be doing and how it might compromise her husband. Maybe they do. We just don't hear because we have a corrupt Supreme Court. Riley?
Polish farmers have ended their months-long blockade of the last obstructed border crossing with Ukraine, a move that improves the strained bilateral relations between the two countries. The blockade began over concerns of unfair competition and the impact of Ukrainian truckers operating without permits, and has disrupted trade and heightened tensions. The protests focused on the transit of grain products, which will actually still face certain restrictions despite the reopening. Ukrainian officials praised the constructive negotiations that led to the reopening and say that it signals a potential shift towards closer cooperation. Both countries have been involved in discussions to resolve the issues with Ukraine, also seeking intervention from the EU to ease the situation, which seems like it will no longer be necessary. So a good step.
Yeah, well, certainly it's an important border. A lot of the supplies that go into Ukraine come from that border. A lot of the cash that Ukraine's able to make comes from the export of agricultural products across a border like that one. So it's not just the usual hubba bubba between two countries. It's actually something that's got consequences for this war and for unity between countries in Europe as they face a Russian threat. Positive development and one that we hope leads to closer cooperation, particularly as other threats across borders emerge in the region. Recently, there have been a spate of stories about Russia pushing forward with its efforts to involve itself in Moldova and to potentially claim the strip of land known as Transnistria, which is, again, another Ukraine-like threat in the region. Russia's not backing down at the moment, although with new weapons flowing, perhaps their attitudes will change soon. Chris?
Mid ongoing tensions from the nearly seven-month-long Israel-Hamas war, demonstrations on college campuses across the U.S. have heightened internal debates within the Democratic Party. These protests have sparked discussions about balancing free speech with support for Gazans, while addressing concerns for some Jewish Americans about rising anti-Semitism. These campus events have also drawn significant police responses and attracted outside participants, complicating the Democrats' efforts to maintain their image as a party of stability and normalcy ahead of challenging upcoming elections. Veteran Democrats note the potential political risks as the party grapples with internal divisions over American policy towards Israel and the broader Middle East conflict. Additionally, instances of anti-Semitic language and intimidation at these protests have led to condemnation from both sides of the aisle, though some Democrats emphasize the importance of distinguishing between few disruptive voices and the broader peaceful movement advocating for change.
Yeah, well, of course, there should be a distinction between a few voices that offer an anti-Semitic view or offer a view that might be seen as Hamas adjacent. That's, you know, I mean, that's not the majority of what we're hearing here. You hear a lot of people say, oh, these are violent demonstrations. No, they're not. The only violence has been perpetrated by the police. And you hear people saying, well, this is creating an intimidating atmosphere. Usually it's not. They're sectioned off away from the campus. Obviously, there's no place on a campus for anti-Semitism. There's no place for anti-Muslim hate. There's no place for racism. There's no place for threats. All of those things are bad. But I think people need to also recognize that sometimes groups seek to infiltrate these things to make them seem more extreme than they really are. And they're missing the point. The point is that coast to coast across the nation, college kids are upset about what's going on in Gaza, and upset with good reason. And so long as their protests are peaceful, not marred by hate speech, they are in the grand tradition of college protests since the beginning of time. College kids are there, they're studying the world, and they're, you know, testing out their muscles as influencers of public affairs. It's generally a good thing. You have to ask yourself if this, you know, promotes divisions in the Democratic Party. I suspect all of these people would go directly from their their pro-peace marches in Gaza to an anti-Trump rally. So I don't really think that this necessarily is a sign of real fragmentation within the Democratic Party, some analyses notwithstanding. Riley?
At least 35 people have died and many are missing after a dam burst in Nakuru County, Kenya, amid devastating nationwide flooding exacerbated by heavy rains since March. Officials report that rescue teams are struggling with the overwhelming task of searching for survivors and retrieving bodies, with the death toll expected to rise. The incident is part of a broader crisis in Kenya where over 100 fatalities have been recorded and thousands displaced due to floods that have affected nearly half the country. The floods, which are intensified by El Nino and climate change and have led to major disruptions, including postponed school terms and widespread destruction of property.
Horrible story, but of course, consistent with the stories that we're hearing from around the world of more extreme events. I was just talking to somebody yesterday who said that the expectations are for a worse than usual hurricane season here in the United States. That begins in June and extends through the fall. We ought to expect more extreme events, and we'll see more governments be valued on their ability to respond to such events going forward. Should add that this past weekend was the weekend of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. This particular person, who has been to those dinners before, swore them off a long time ago and spent the weekend in New York City as a way of avoiding it. But I did watch the Colin Jost send up of President Biden and the others, and thought it was bland but not objectionable. There was a bit of a controversy. The New York Times said he fell flat on his face. And part of that is allegedly because he attacked the New York Times, which is under attack from a variety of sources recently. Notably for its assertions that Joe Biden wouldn't do an interview with them, which they feel is, outrageous, as the paper of record. And many were amused when Biden chose last week instead to do an hour-long interview with Howard Stern, which was kind of thumbing their nose at the New York Times. As the paper of record, of course, the Stern interview will get much broader readership, listenership. And Joe Biden was great on it. I listened to it over the weekend. It was a kind of an interview about who he is as a person, what he's been through in his life. Very human, he was very sharp and reflected, that he's got a good character. It was a kind of a great thing. If you haven't listened to it, you should. We've got a usual big, busy week full of podcasts coming, including a new one from us called Silla Consciousness, which is a podcast on AI, which you'll be able to get in our channel and ultimately on its own channel. But in addition to that, you can get above average intelligence. You can get our special book podcast that we have on a regular basis. We've got one, I think, each week for the next few weeks coming up. You've got Deep State Radio, The Mothership. You've got Words Matter. You've got We're All Gonna Die Radio. There's a lot of stuff going on here. And then, of course, there's the Daily Blast with Greg Sargent, the podcast that we do with The New Republic. So I encourage you, go listen, join us. There's new things coming, and they're great. For now, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. And thanks to all of you for joining us.